The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Rick Roberts. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across this great nation, it's Red Eye Radio. Rick Robertson for Gary and Eric, always a pleasure. You can catch me doing afternoon drive Monday through Friday from 2 to 5 Central Time out of Dallas, News Talk 820 WBAP. Had some calls earlier from the East Coast, I think New Jersey and New York both. Some people pretty concerned about what's going on out in California. I worked out of San Diego for, 16 and a half years, I guess. At that time, I remember sitting behind a microphone for hour after hour after hour, 8-9 hours at a time, the Cedar Fire and many other fires. But this looks like a much, much worse situation. I think the car, what's being called the car fire, is the biggest. Shasta County, Highway 299 and Car Powerhouse Road. With me is Scott McClain, Deputy Chief with CAL FIRE. Sir, thank you for being with me. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, at the last time I checked was about 48 hours ago, something like that. They said there were 18 active wildfires burning across California. Is that correct?
Well, there's 18 significant wildfires, yes. Keep in mind that we respond throughout the state to about 300 on average a week. Last week, however, we responded to over 1,000. So
wow. That was like
over three times than the average.
Well, I also had heard eight people had lost their lives and more than 1,000 homes and businesses were destroyed.
Yes, on the car fire, we're well over that at the moment. It's car fire is now sixth in California's ranking of most destructive fire, top 20.
How many acres? I mean, normally in the South, we measure these fires by acres burned. I mean, what kind of area are we talking about?
As of this evening, we're looking at car fires up to 126,913 acres burned. Unfortunately, the Mendocino complex, which is a combination of two fires, the ranch and the river, has now burned 125,000 acres. So the Mendocino complex is one that is extremely active right now. Car fire still has a couple of areas that need to be addressed, primarily towards Lewiston.
Yeah, the car fire in Redding, I think, is the one we've heard most about. It burned through, 100,000-plus acres in the past week.
Right.
How much of that is contained at this point?
We're looking about 37% containment on the car fire, and it's climbing slowly, but it's climbing, so it's a positive thing. The other fire, the Mendocino, is up to 39% containment, but again, both fires have quite a ways to go.
You know, I know the weather is not helping at all. What do you, I mean, I've been there during the Cedar Fire and some other things around San Diego, and that was bad enough. This, I mean, as fires go, those weren't much compared to what you're dealing with now. What do you attribute, I mean, why is this thing just continuing to spread and burn? I mean, I know it's difficult to get containment. I lived in Colorado for a while, and, you know, there were some simply because of the terrain, it was unbelievably hard to get into it, if they could. Why is this thing just continuing to spread?
Well, basically, we're 2 months ahead of our drying cycle. So the vegetation is 2 months ahead in reference that due to 100-degree weather for the last 2 months, the winds, the low humidities, and the terrain, of course. And then the weather, back to the weather, these winds that we've been having have been very erratic and causing the fire to go in several different directions, which is making it extremely dangerous. The car fire, when it blew into West Redding, It was like a, almost like a fire tornado is what we're calling it right now.
Right, right.
That erratic winds, that erratic weather developed so quickly. It caused that fire to move so quickly. Unfortunately, two firefighters and four civilians lost their lives at that point in West Reading.
You know, I know this is not easy to talk about, but throughout all of California, with all the wildfires and the spreading and the evacuations, I understand some people wouldn't evacuate. What are we looking at as far as loss of life with civilians and first responders?
Year to date, since January 1st, 8 civilians have lost their lives due to wildfires, as well as 4 firefighters.
Yeah, that's tough. It's what are we looking at? I know a lot of people all over the country, and of course we broadcast all over the country. They have family, they have friends in California. One man, I think it was New York or New Jersey earlier tonight, said he was trying to get a hold of some friends and hadn't been able to get a hold of them in a couple of days. But that's probably not unusual, correct?
That's not unusual. I mean, we're looking at one point over 52,000 individuals throughout the state were evacuated, roughly 38,000 just on the car fire alone. So, yeah, the vegetation is so receptive. The fires are moving so fast that it's people have little time to escape.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map of the fires right now, and I mean, literally from San Diego north, California is burning. I know that they set up evacuation shelters and whatnot, but I also heard that one of the evacuation shelters, they had to evacuate.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah. It's that's how fast the fires are moving throughout the state. I mean, there's a lot of fires that are being handled, like the Cranston's looking good. However, the Ferguson outside of Yosemite continues to grow. And then yesterday or day before yesterday, we had 4 fires develop right off the get-go within an hour each other in Northern California. Unfortunately, those 4 were contained and or are getting contained. So it's very dynamic. The fires grow in size very rapidly.
Well, I know that at one point in time in San Diego, I was watching the fire as it would crest a hill. And you'd think, okay, well, that's a long way away. And then an hour later, you're loading your horses up in the trailer to try and take them to Del Mar next to the ocean because it's overrun everything. It's these fires move very, very quickly, don't they?
Right now, especially this year, more so than ever, you are correct.
What's your primary focus? We're talking with Scott McLean, Deputy Chief with CAL FIRE, talking about fires burning literally from San Diego north. I mean, the entire state seems to be touched by this in some way. What's your primary focus? I mean, with so many different fires, I mean, how do you go about prioritizing?
That's very good. It has to do with a lot with life safety. For an example, one of the fires on the Mendocino complex had a no divert on air tankers this evening. In other words, the fixed wing aircraft were assigned to the river fire. They could not divert to any other fires until certain situations were mitigated with that fire around those communities involved. Keep in mind that we've got over 16 states in the United States that have sent resources or are sending resources to California to help with their fight. The National Guard, both air and on the ground, are heavily involved, as they always are with us in this fight. We've got, I believe, up to 12 hand crews of troops on the ground that are taking care of the situation as well.
How do you train people that quickly?
With the Guard, we have trainings early in the year. Aircraft especially, I had the chance to go and watch aircraft training, helicopters, earlier this year. We put CAL FIRE individuals in the aircraft and to help manage the situation. The troops, we've had trainings with the troops as far as hand crews, cutting line, and et cetera.
Yeah, again, having worked out of San Diego, the helicopters with water buckets and the fixed wing with the retardant drops. You know, it's something you see generally every year, but never have I ever seen anything this expansive that has touched so many people. and burned up so much acreage. It's man, listen, first of all, our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody. And it's just, I can't imagine having to fight this thing on so many different fronts.
Yeah, it's very trying to say the least.
Well, all the best, Scott McLean, Deputy Chief with CAL FIRE. We had several calls from people calling in wanting to know where it is and what's going on. And this is tough. Man, keep a positive thought for these people because, you know, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, over 18 now different fires they're trying to fight. And these aren't just little grass fires. These are major fires burning up hundreds of thousands of acres and unfortunately taking some lives along the way. So if you're so inclined, throw out a prayer and keep some positive thoughts for these folks. All right. I'm Rick Roberts, in for Eric, Gary McNamara and Eric Carley. This is Red Eye Radio.
Tires are one of the largest operating costs for owner-operators and fleets alike, but retreading allows you to save money by extending the life of your tires. The cost of a retreaded tire can be anywhere from 30 to 50% less than the cost of a new tire. In order to retread your old or existing tires, they must be properly maintained. In addition to maintaining proper inflation levels, any casing punctures or penetrations must be patched and repaired correctly. If any punctures are patched from the inside without a proper plug installed, moisture and harmful chemicals will infiltrate the tire's belt package, rendering the tire out of service and unable to retread. Proper repairs will help maintain the integrity of your tires and allow for multiple retreads, saving you money and downtime.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Across America, it's Red Eye Radio. I'm Rick Roberts, in for Gary McNamara and Eric Carley. Always a pleasure to be in for the guys when they're away. By the way, if you're looking for a station list, maybe a podcast, or you want to listen to the live full five-hour show, go to the app or listen live button at redeyeradioshow.com. That's redeyeradioshow.com. All right, want to get to your calls. You've been very, very patient. I appreciate that. And I appreciate Scott McLean, the deputy chief with CAL FIRE. I know he's trying to catch any amount of sleep he can get. And so I appreciate his time as well, trying to bring you up to date with the very latest going on in California. John in Lynchburg, Virginia. John, thank you for waiting. How you doing, John?
Good. How are you this evening?
I'm well, thanks.
My heart does go out to these people losing their homes, losing all of their memories, their kids' pictures, etc. But I can't help think about the fact that, California and it's really, the Forestry Service's policy now that we can't go in and remove the underbrush. We can't go in and do burn-offs. I don't think California's built a reservoir in, 20 or 30 years. The environmentalists have taken over the thinking, and then when we do have a fire, I remember when I was a kid, you'd watch the evening news, and you would see how California and the western states were preparing for wildfire season.
Right,
and
right.
They were going in with bulldozers, and they were making roads, and they were doing all these things. And now all of that isn't allowed anymore. And I know that I'm not trying to do the blame game, but you just sit back and you wonder that these things don't have to happen probably maybe as badly as they are if we had a little preparation to take care of these issues.
Well, what John is saying, I know at one time is true. I don't know if it's still true, but if you were a homeowner in certain areas of California, you were forbidden to remove brush, I forget how many feet from the home, to preserve the natural beauty and, you know, the Mesa Mint and all the stuff. And a lot of people said, you know what, I don't care if they come out here and take me to jail. I'm not going to let my house burn up. And so they would clear this underbrush, and many of them would be cited for it. I don't know if that's still the case, John, but what you're saying is absolutely true, or it was at one time.
Well, and I understand the guy from you know, Cal Fires is coming on and he's giving this information, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the fact that they are, you know, they're probably working, you know, 12, 15, 20-hour shifts to get this under control. But, you know, my dad kind of taught me. My dad was a Boy Scout, a Life Scout when he was a kid. You know, if you're not prepared, if you don't do some preparation, if you don't think about what's ahead, you know, it's going to bite you in the butt. And it seems like a lot of these fires are a lot worse when you don't go in for 10 or 20 years and remove the underbrush,
correct,
remove the dead timber, because you might offend some owl.
Yeah, and controlled burns used to be a way they would manage, but you're right. The environmentalist the pendulum of common sense, John, always swings too far to the left or too far to the right, in politics, too. It never slows down in the middle where most of us live. You know, common sense would tell you, God forbid there's a lightning strike or, you know, legal campfire or whatever it happened, or a car sitting too long in tall grass and a fire starts, I don't want my home covered up with underbrush. So, a lot of homeowners have taken that into their own hands. Good call, John. Very informative, and you're right. Let's go to Ike in North Charleston, South Carolina. Ike, thank you for the call. I appreciate you waiting.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking the call. You know, there's something I've been thinking about for years, and I just don't understand why somebody hadn't pulled the trigger on it and just got it done. I think for the folks out west there, California in particular, but, you know, there's other states that get involved in this kind of mess every year. I don't understand why either the states haven't banded together, or if it took the feds to do it, have the feds do it. They should have a fleet of planes that can handle this chemical retardant or water, you know, a fleet of planes and helicopters, like in a military sense, say a brigade, and that's what their specialty is and that's what they do. You know, the same way I've always thought that maybe we should have something similar to that for emergency flood response. You know, it just seems like these disasters, whether it's fire or flood, you know, depending on outside contractors and, hodgepodge of people to have the amount of equipment that we need, et cetera, seems to be a little bit short-sighted trying to, you know, I think you're, spending a dollar to save a nickel there.
No, I
don't get it.
I think you're right. And like I said, I used to broadcast out of San Diego for about 16 and a half years. And I flew back and forth from Texas to, the coast every 12 days or so. And they do have small groups of these flame retardant planes, also the helicopters that they outfit with the water buckets where they fly over the reservoir and fill them up. And they've got them scattered out. I'm sure there's some strategy to it some way. But they're like 5, 6, 7, at small airports up and down the coast. And I don't know if it's enough because I'm not an expert. Obviously, when you've got 18 fires, major fires, burning up 100,000 acres and taking 8 lives, you don't have enough equipment. But how often does that happen? I was on the air for the Cedar Fire trying to give evacuation routes and things like that. But it's a tough deal. But you're right. It seems like we ought to be able to come together. They got, 16 states, 18 states helping them right now? It's not enough. All right. We'll get back to your calls in just a second. I'm Rick Roberts on Red Eye Radio.
Cut.
lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Rick Roberts.
Thank you so much for being along. I appreciate that. 866-90-RED-EYE. That's the talk line. 1-866-907-3339. Let's get right back to your calls. Holly in Naperville, Illinois. Holly, thank you for waiting. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I was just like kind of like soaking it all in and wondering if all the disasters and all the, you know, like fires, floods, everything, you know, isn't that like part of evolution? Like, is there really anything we can do about it? Because I'm kind of wondering if that's how everything goes. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's
one of those things where...
Yeah, a certain amount of you know, natural disaster is going to happen. Unfortunately, right. Human beings live just about everywhere now. So, you know, if I used to see it in Colorado all the time. You know, people, you know, live up in the mountains and lightning strikes even in the daytime. And all of a sudden, now these people are running for their lives. But, you know, that's probably been going on for thousands of years.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's just like, I think it's part of, like, evolution. Like, it rolls on.
Like, yeah, you know,
ice ages and, I mean, just stuff like that just is going to happen. It's just like.
Well, I think some of this, Holly, I think some of it is preventable. I know north of San Diego, there's the Cranston fire. And, of course, the first thing you think about were illegals camped out, because illegals come up for seasonal work, and they camp out in the canyons, could be hundreds at a time, and they use the canyons as, you know, their home site. They pitch their tents, and they dig latrines and all the rest. And sometimes things get out of hand, so... You know, people start looking. That kind of stuff is preventable. Unfortunately, people live now in places that were very hard to access before. And like the Cranston fire, it's now, I'm not sure how many acres, it's pretty well contained, but the fire has transitioned back to the San Bernardino National Forest. So, you know, it's a tough thing, but obviously you try to cut the odds as much as you can. You know, it's not like in Hawaii, you know, you build a house at the foot of a volcano, then you wonder why you got lava in the front room. I mean, stuff is going to happen, you know? All right. Holly, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Tom in Massachusetts. Tom, thank you very much for waiting. I appreciate it.
Okay, Rick. I appreciate your taking my call. Now, something stinks to high heaven about these fires. Now, I've heard, it seems very political. Now, I've heard this, I don't know if it's true, that the fires, there's a lot of sanctuary cities in California, and the fires where cities are burning are non-sanctuary cities. Is that true?
Man, I don't know. That's a leap. I know one fire's east of Hemet, which is north of San Diego. National parks, that's on fire. The national forest, the Inyo National Forest. I would be hard pressed to try and make an argument for that.
I wouldn't put anything past these Democrats. You are not a Democrat, are you?
No, I'm an independent.
Oh, okay.
I'm a conservative, but I'll tell you what happened. I was a lifelong Republican until Bush went on the "They're Just Doing Jobs Americans Won't Do" tour when he was trying to push amnesty, and he walked away from the conservative base. That's where the Tea Party came from. If the Republican Party is not even to be smart enough to take care of its own base, I'll go independent, and which is what I did, because I am a conservative, and I felt at the time, and I think still to some degree, Republicans have forgotten their conservative roots.
Yeah, I remember that Bush is out there saying that jobs Americans won't do.
Right. The illegals are here just doing jobs Americans won't do. Remember when McCain, he went out there, where was it? I forget where it was. And he said, you know, these people are just here doing jobs that you don't want to do. I'll raise your hands. I'll pay anybody here $50 an hour to pick cabbage or lettuce or whatever it was. Every hand in the room went up. And he goes, well, no, not just for one day, for the whole season. You can't do it, my friend. And I thought, good Lord. You know, why don't you just say we're trying to push amnesty and we're trying to cover it with the fact that, you know, Americans won't make beds or blow leaves or mow lawns or pick lettuce. I mean, it was just an effort in futility. The only good part about that, I will tell you, the only good part about that was Bush finally went back to Washington and said, forget it, boys, they're not buying it, move on. And they did. With Obama, he didn't care what Americans thought. He just pushed it through himself. Good call. I appreciate it very, very much. Let's go to Colorado. Talk with Joe. Joe, thank you for waiting. I appreciate the patience. How you doing?
Yeah, doing very well, thank you. And even on this side of the Rockies here, the haze in the eye and the sky tells us that those fires are really bad out there.
Yeah,
the
they
skies are real, real hazy.
What part of Colorado are you from?
Well, Centennial.
Oh, okay.
South of Denver.
All right. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, the skies, you could tell there's a massive fires going on.
Well, even in San Diego, during the San Diego wildfires, I mean, it took months for the air to clear up. And, of course, in Denver, you get the temperature inversion, you know, it hits the Rockies and flips around. And, of course, I lived in Evergreen, so I'd get past that a little bit. What's going on, Joe?
Well, I would like you maybe listen and tell me if I'm crazy or not, but it deals with what like the Acosta thing at the briefing, you know, the CNN reporter.
Right.
I really thought he was going to jump out of his seat and start pounding on the ground and screaming. You have to say it. And it is adolescence that we're dealing with. You know, it took me a while, and I said, this isn't fake news. This is adolescent news. We're dealing with people who have not grown up yet. They can't think, you know, we think a certain way. I don't think they think that way. It's like dealing with a child. I really think that young adult from the Florida shooting down there, the 17, 16-year-old, you know, who became their spokesman, could sit in Morning Joe's seat right now, and he's at the same level of maturity as Good Morning Joe or whoever he is. And that's what I see it as. It's adolescence. You have to talk differently to them. You have to think differently. And I think, you know, we've maybe forgot how to do that. Our kids are older than that. But it's not fake news. It's adolescent news. They can't take the thing what the president says, you know, that the news is is bad for the country or something like that.
No, the press is the enemy of
the
people.
He's talking about those people, certain ones, you know, and they can't separate that.
Well, no, I'll answer your question. You're not crazy. Acosta acted like a petulant school child. I mean, it was just an embarrassment. The fact that he calls himself a journalist and can come out with such a display, it's unforgivable. You know, who is Acosta to tell anyone anything, let alone the press secretary? Say it. You've got to say it. We deserve it. You don't deserve anything. You ought to be lucky you've got your butt in a chair, and you should be glad that nobody carried you out. I mean, it's called decorum, Acosta. Decorum. Look it up. It would serve you well to embrace decorum one of these days. No, Joe, you're not crazy. Randy in Bethel Island, California. Randy, thank you for waiting. I appreciate it. How you doing?
Hi, how are you? I'm back to the beach thing. I was riding on the bus one day talking to a black bus driver. We were talking about Harry didn't prosecute those two Black Panthers and that was any
Okay, Randy, we've got a really, really bad connection. I'm not going to drop you. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll see if we can get a better connection. I don't want to miss what you're saying, but you're cutting on out on us pretty badly. Well, let's go to Doug in Connecticut. Doug, thank you for waiting. Doug, what's going on?
Hey, Rick. I like when you fill in for the guys, Gary, there and Eric. But, getting back to the Papa John guy there. Seems like a nice guy. I mean, there's got to be more to that story than what we're being told. But I have an example for you of I work in a shipyard, or I did, and the black guys up there, the back and forth to one another all day long in front of, they didn't care who, that's the word they used, they called each other. And I think they were doing it with the A. Now, one of the same people that I'm talking about got in an argument with the white guy, and the white guy used the word to him. The black guy went to human resources and tried to get the guy fired. Now, I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you the same thing I told my son. You know, he grew up. He grew up with a lot of these guys, and they played ball together. They spent nights at each other's homes, that kind of stuff. Like I told him. You know, I don't care if it is just you guys. I don't care if you are in the locker room. I don't care if you are out here on, a bunch of acres with a basketball court and horses. That's not your word. You don't get to use that ever, you just don't.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, I mean, I just thought it was, I felt so bad for the guy. He actually had to move his work position. At the shipyard I'm talking about, they have, like, across the street, they have a couple different sections where they build submarines and blah, blah, blah. And,
right, right.
It was just ridiculous. It really,
Doug, here's the difference. The Papa John's guy was repeating what someone else had said in order to be descriptive to the marketing people. In your particular case, with your coworker, he called the guy that.
Yeah, but I mean, no one knows exactly how that all went down. No one, it was just the two of them when it happened. So, you don't hear both sides of the story, I guess you could say.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Doug, you're never going to get the full story. Generally speaking, there's always another side, even if you've vetted the thing and drilled down and tried to get as much first-hand experience as you can. There's always another side to it. But what Papa John did was nothing like that. If a guy got angry, got in an argument with another guy and called him the N-word, that's a slur. I mean, there's no two ways about that. And just because the black guy used the word all the time doesn't make it okay for the white guy to use. I know it's a double standard, but, that's just society. That's the way it is. All right, more of your calls coming up. This is Rick Roberts on Red Eye Radio.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
All across America, it's Red Eye Radio. Rick Roberts in for Gary McNamara and Ari Carley. Always a pleasure to be in for the guys when they're away. You can find me during the week, Monday through Friday, doing the afternoon drive Central Time, 2 to 5 on News Talk 820 WBAP out of Dallas. Let's get right to your calls. Let's go to Lance in Frederick, Oklahoma. I know it well. How you doing, Lance?
I'm doing well, Rick. Thanks for taking the call. And I have a question that maybe you can answer or some of the listeners can answer.
All right.
Of all the pejorative terms that are used for white people, Germans or Italians or Asians or Hispanics, it seems that the pejorative term that we use for black people seems to have more weight. There's more of a response to it than there are for any of those other kind of epithets. They're all intended to hurt. But it seems that the Asians and the Hispanics and white folks just don't care that much, but black folks do. And I'm wondering, my question is, how did we get there? Why is the N-word off limits, but those other pejorative terms aren't? How did we get there?
Lance, that's a very good question. I'm not a black guy. I don't know. I would, if I were to venture a guess, I would say that the N-word aligns itself, perhaps hand in glove, with blatant racism. People that felt that people were less of a human being. That's my guess. Lance, I wish I could help you out some more. I can't. This is Rick Roberts on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Rick Roberts. This is Red Eye Radio.
And thank you so much. 866-90-RED-EYE. That's 1-866-907-3339. That's the talk line. Now, before we get too far down the road, I just wanted to get this off my chest. I don't know, maybe you don't mind spending your hard-earned tax dollars for absolutely nothing, but I think it's time. It's time for Mueller to let it go. It's been what? May, June, July, August. It's been 15 months. No collusion in sight. You basically bagged a dozen Russian computer nerds that will never see the inside of an American courthouse. And, of course, you know that because there's no extradition with Russia. So you can make all the accusations you want, knowing full well you're never going to have to prove it in court. So, and let's see, who else did we have? Manafort, of course. He's got tax issues, but that was long before Trump came along. So at the end of the day, what are you getting for your money? It's been between 17 and 20, kind of hard to figure. Yeah, here a million, there a million, especially when you're not held accountable for it. You can spend as much as you want. If you don't find any collusion within a year, how much longer do you give the guy? No, I'm serious. I mean, you haven't found anything yet, and now I guess it's no longer about collusion. It's just a general investigation of anybody that shows up. I don't think the American people are signed up for that. I don't think you were supposed to be signed up for that. So at the end of the day, and I mean no disrespect to the special counsel, but why are we still paying you? Why are you still spending taxpaying dollars when you haven't found anything yet? You know, I heard, I think it was NBC, and of course they came on very informative and news-like. Well, we know now, beyond a reasonable doubt, that was meddling to control the American conversation. I'm not making it up. That's exactly what he said. That was meddling to control the American conversation. All right. They've already admitted the outcome of the election was not meddled with. I hate that word, by the way. The outcome of the election wasn't affected. So if a bunch of empty-headed people that get all their news off the internet are the only people that were affected, then what difference does it make? Russian meddling. Trump's national security team has come out in the last, 24 hours saying Russia's behind efforts to meddle in the U.S. elections again, I guess the midterms. But what are they going to do? They're not going to airlift, a bunch of paratroopers into Wichita, Kansas and go mess around with the voting machines, are they? No. This is not a scene from Red Dawn. You know, they get on social media, they put up a bunch of blogs and posts. I'm sure we do the same to them. But if you're that void of any, I'm trying to be politically correct here. If you're that stupid, then, you know, that's on you. Well, why don't you just call it what it is? The Russians are taking advantage of stupid Americans. There you go. That makes sense. And that's basically what it boils down to. If the outcome of the last election was not changed, and they said that, the investigator said no Americans were involved, the outcome was not changed, then what are we doing? What are we doing? We acknowledge the threat. It's real. It's continuing. And we're doing everything we can do to have a legitimate election. Well, you had a legitimate election last time. Well, we're not sure. Some Americans' minds might have been changed by something they saw on the internet. Well, that's just because they're dumb. And I don't mean to be ugly about it, but if you're stupid, you're stupid. It's just that simple. I mean, tell me what it is. I've yet to hear from anyone. What is it exactly that you think the Russians are doing that's going to change the election? Besides controlling the American conversation, whatever that means. I mean, seriously. I have a real concern about meddling in our elections. I do. But it's not from the Russians. It's from the Democrats. They're trying to lower the voting age all over them. Did you hear what they wanted to do in D.C.? Lower the voting age for a presidential election to 16. 16? In another area, they wanted to give them half a vote at 14. I was still putting baseball cards in the spokes of my bicycle at 14. What do I know about they're legal, no voter ID, we don't need that. Don't need that. Why not? Well, we just don't. I mean, yes, I have real concerns about meddling in American elections, but it doesn't, you don't have to go any further than the United States. It's the Democratic Party. Mike in Clearwater, Florida. Mike, thank you for waiting. I appreciate it. How you doing, Mike?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. My comment was about the last caller, Lance. He was asking about the way I see it, the origins of negative things about the N-word.
Right.
And, you know, I'm black. I'm a registered conservative. I voted for Trump. And I think that we're headed in the right direction when Lance just puts himself on the radio and says, hey, I'm curious about this. You know, I'm interested about it. I want to know how we got to this point. And I think just the fact that he brought that up is a step in the right direction. So
I do too.
even if he never discovers the root of that, just the fact that he's opening up his mind and thinking in that direction shows to me that he's thinking about our country. He's thinking about what can make it better and so that we can get at the business at hand, which is coming together and defending our country in every aspect.
Well, you say you're black, Mike?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I got a question then.
Go ahead.
Why do blacks call each other the N-word? Why in hip-hop music, and we had a previous caller that pointed that out, and he was correct. Why in hip-hop music do you continually hear the N-word used? Now, I understand that situation with my son. I mean, he grew up with these guys, and they were like brothers. I mean, you know, they harassed each other and all that kind of stuff. But I never got into it with him. I just told him that's not his word. He can never use it. But why do blacks call each other the N-word?
Yeah, so I can't speak for all of them, but just speaking on an academic level, I think at some point some people had to find some way to embrace something that was everywhere, which would be that word, and that they really didn't have any way of avoiding it. So they said, well, how can I internalize this, change it a bit, since I can't avoid it? And so I think that's could be some way how it evolved.
And, yeah, see, I've never understood that, really, I mean, at its core. when you hear, you know, on the basketball court, and, you know, of course, my son playing baseball and football, you hear, you know, guys going back and forth all the time. Yeah. And when two black guys are just, and they're friends, they're not enemies, they're friends, but they're calling each other the N-word and laughing and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the trash talk you hear with sports guys. And then in the hip-hop music, I mean, I very seldom, if ever, have I heard a white person say that, use that word. So I guess I don't fully understand why black people use that with each other.
Yeah, so I'll respond by saying that I think to some degree, there's something wrong with them doing that personally, because outside of them calling each other that, they're not interested in being called that by another race or something. So I think there is a clue that I think that
it almost seems, Mike, you know, it's such a derogatory term, or it's been painted that way throughout the history.
Yep.
It's almost like, okay, this is such a derogatory term. I don't want anybody to call me that. I'm going to take ownership of that word and change it to equate to something like brother, or, you know, close friend, or basically we get to use this word. Nobody else does.
I think you've hit it on the nail. I really do, because I feel that you're in a way maybe going back to what I was saying, which is that they had to face the word. They couldn't change it. I mean, they had to face it, and they couldn't avoid it. So they decided to internalize it and make it become something else. And now that I own it, you can't use it, because there's no way that you could know how to use it.
Right.
So I would say just in closing, I think you got it right on the button. And just to your point about Mueller, I may be a little outside the box here. I'm not saying whether or not Russia did something or they didn't, but my opinion is that politics is a very messy arena, and campaigns are a disagreement, and they divide. But we've had an election, and elections are a decision, and the decision is that we've gotten behind our president, and he's made, since day one, some concrete moves that demonstrate that he's leading the nation in a direction that says we're taking care of our country, we're taking care of our nation, and that's positive for our country. And I don't know what Mueller's doing, but I think that for the good of our nation, he needs to come forward to Congress and say, look, this is what I have, and I want you to tell me, do you think it's in the best interest of our nation to move forward with it and do it right now, or to put it behind us?
No, I think you're 100% correct. I'm up against a break here, but I think you're right. First of all, thank you for your input on the N-word. You know, and I don't know. I can sit here and say, oh, I know what it's like to be a black man. No, I don't. I'm a white guy. I'm never going to know what it's like to be a black man. But that's the only thing I could come up with as far as, you know, why black people call each other the N-word. But nobody else can. Not that they should. That's, I'm not saying that. All right. We'll take more of your calls. As far as Mueller goes, don't you think it's time? Wrap it up? Pack it up, take it to the house. I can think of a lot more things to spend millions of dollars on, like paying cops what they're worth. That's one thing. I can think of a lot of things to spend money on rather than chasing ghosts under the bed. He hadn't found anything in 15 months. What makes him think he's going to find anything next week? I'm Rick Roberts. This is Red Eye Radio.
A new Agriculture Department report says of the 2 million or so households operating a farm in this country, a bit more than half of them lose money on the farm operation.
And that raises the question, why do these households continue to operate a farm?
Yes, but one of the co-authors of that report, economist Daniel Prager, says there are some other things that can help offset those losses. And in fact, losing money on the farm operation might help you out tax-wise.
A household can reduce their taxable income by offsetting their non-farm income with the farm loss.
But there are other offsets as well. The value of farm and non-farm assets for farm households has gone up almost every year, and so some farmers in a pinch are able to borrow money on that collateral. The study looked particularly at data in 2015, showing that in most cases, the smaller the farm operation, the greater the chances of losing money on the farm. But on the other hand,
they tend to have off-farm income that they can use to cover expenses.
So they keep on farming, some to supplement their incomes, others just because they love it. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Across America, it's Red Eye Radio. I'm Rick Roberts, in for Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. Always a pleasure to be in for the guys when they're away. Want to get right back to your calls. 1-866-90-RED-EYE. That's 1-866-907-3339. Let's go to David. David's calling from Tennessee. David, thank you for your patience. Hi.
Thank you. Rick, I've listened to you for years. I've never called in, but I'm a retired CEO of an international forging company, and when I found I had problems within my own staff, I got rid of them. That took care of the problem. Donald Trump is being undermined by not just this Mueller thing, which is pure fiction, and if I were Donald Trump, I would fire him tomorrow. I would call in Sessions and his assistant attorney general. I would fire them. But before doing it, I would have replacements in place to fill that void. And I would fire anyone who was not fully with me, because you cannot continue to move when you've got a bunch of snakes and you're in the middle of the pit.
Oh, I totally agree. You know,
I think the American people would be 100% for him, except those who don't care. And I know there's another thing I'd like to touch upon that for some reason has been either overlooked or neglected. Is Valerie Jarrett ran this country the 8 years that Obama was in there. She was an effective, he was a hemorrhoid, and she was the one carrying him. She had made statements previously. She was born in Iran. She's made statements that she wanted to control the United States and completely have it ruled by Sharia law. And Obama purposely did everything he could to undermine and destabilize our country. It was a planned thing, and he tried to destroy our country, and he should be trialed, as far as I'm concerned, for treason.
I look at it this way. If I were to criticize the Trump administration right after the inauguration, it would be that Trump should have gone in and basically shown the door to every single Obama holdover, and he didn't do that.
I agree. Yeah, you can't when you get rid of roaches, you've got to keep on until they're all gone. And you know, you can't just leave a few, because they'll just regenerate. And I would fire the head of the FBI currently. I'd fire every one of them in the top two tiers of the FBI, and I'd make it known you're going to run this country as a federal police enforcement agency.
No, I agree with you 100%. Now your national forecast, brought to you by Omnitracs.
5 to 7 day rain totals put the brunt of the rain across the country right on the eastern side of the Appalachians. From North Georgia into the Carolinas, Virginia, West Virginia, portions of central PA, on up through New York and Maine, we'll see the heavy rain. And since it's a mountainous area, we'll see a lot of stream runoff and potential flash flooding through the weekend as a result of the heavy rain in the mid-Atlantic and Northeast. Hurricane season thus far has been very calm, but in the Pacific, Hector continues to strengthen. Current thinking is there'll be no threat to any land. Los Angeles today, 86 and sunny as western wildfires continue. No rain there. For Seattle, a slight chance of rain. High today, 71. Dallas, 97 and clear today and tomorrow. New York City, 86. Atlanta, 82, where showers may get a break in the action today. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
John, thank you very much. Coming up, the top five Democrats that may challenge Trump in 2020.
Lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Rick Roberts.
And thank you once again. Always a pleasure to be in for the guys. 1-866-90-RED-EYE. That's 1-866-907-3339. Well, look, I don't know why he would want to. After the first term, fighting everyone, the Democrats, the media, his own party. But if Trump does run again, and I've talked to some people that say he's more than likely, based on being an A-type personality, he probably will. Who's he going up against? Well, I've got the top five for you. During a campaign tour of the West late last month, and this person... I don't want to be ugly about it, but everything about her just hits me the wrong way. Senator Elizabeth Warren. She didn't announce she was running for president, but in the private events and the public speeches, her message about 2020 was about as clear as it could be. Well, who else? Well, how about former Vice President Biden? Looks like he's prepared to throw his hat in the ring. Cory Booker. Yes. Kamala Harris, and you know him, you love him, you can't live without him, the doddering old socialist bumping into trees, Bernie Sanders. Because let's face it, Bernie was about to knock Hillary out for the Democratic nomination until they got together and decided to work against him. But that's just the Democrat Party. I look in this cast of characters, and I think to myself, all right, who would I like to see Trump go up against? I'll be honest, just about everybody. I don't think Elizabeth Warren could pull it off. Maybe Biden could give him a run for his money. Cory Booker, obviously not. Kamala Harris, I don't think so. Bernie Sanders, he's big with the kids, but will they turn out in force to vote? Let's go to Jack in Corpus Christi, Texas. Jack, thanks for waiting. How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing fine, Rick. I wanted to share something with you. In terms of the issues you've talked about, I found that when I try to talk to liberals in a logical, non-emotional, I guess almost to get through to them blunt way, that they've always been difficult to deal with. But I'm finding even intelligent people that I enjoy being around are so hate-driven or so biased now that I'm just largely wasting my time, and all I do is make myself mad and aggravate them.
That's probably true. But have you ever asked yourself the question, based on what he's been able to accomplish this short term in office, why do people hate Trump so much?
I think it's because he's successful and because of they've had some vested interest or some deep-seated belief that, you know, the Democrats are always right and that I found the only people that I've heard that basically changed their tune are those that listen to a show like yours or Rush Limbaugh has. Occasionally people, you know, call in and say that over time, based on listening to him and hearing the accomplishments and the, you know, the positive changes and the constitutional issues and you know, what the history of America really is and represents, that it takes time and logic and repeated doses of truth to change their minds.
You know, I had a lady call in today on my afternoon show, and she said she was a lifelong Democrat. Actually, two calls today. Lifelong Democrat, and after listening, I come on that station, I come on right after Rush. And she said, after listening to Rush and you for the last year or so, you know, I've changed my mind. And, you know, that was very, I mean, it's flattering, obviously, but that's very interesting to me. Because as a lifelong Democrat, you're able to change in a year. Well, truth is truth, no matter, you know, what kind of lipstick you put on it, no matter how you dress it up, truth is always going to be the truth. And that's why I wonder aloud why people hate Trump so much. Don't you want to work? Don't you want your economy to flourish? Don't you want the world stage to know you're not a doormat, but instead a superpower? I mean, I just can't figure out why they hate him so much.
Well, I can't answer that. I kind of think so, but I've been in sales a long time, and I always tell my potential customers, my prospects, look, what I'm giving you is the best information for you and your company, and what I'm trying to do is to, you know, give you factual information, not emotional, but good information to make a decision on. And I'm finding that, you know, when you talk to a liberal and you give them, like you said, all the accomplishments and all the positive things and the things that are logical and, I guess, become almost blunt because you're not being politically correct, is they choose to reject good information. They just, they won't, it's like they've stuck their head in the ground, and if something is not on their radar screen that they agree with, they absolutely reject it.
Yeah, you know, if people dislike Trump because I'm a socialist, I want to be a socialist nation, and I can't do that as long as Trump's in office, I would disagree with that vehemently, but at least I would understand that's an honest thing. I mean, I just don't get why people hate him.
I think it's part of it is because they've come to accept the news media as fact, in that just so much inundation every day with everything being negative about him, it just that over time, and Rush alludes to this, over time some people are, you know, are convinced and so convinced that they can't go back in the other direction.
You know, maybe that's it. Maybe that, you know, I know initially, oh, he said this on a tape about some, I don't know, somebody. And then, you know, he's been linked to porn stars or, you know, whatever it is. But see, all of that is irrelevant to me. Is he doing it in the White House? No. Has Melania come to terms with that? I don't know. That's his business. All I'm concerned about is somebody that can run the country. And so I don't understand this visceral reaction people have to just Trump's. Well, you had a lady the other day, the guy had a Make America Great Again on the back of his car, and she just rammed him several times. You know, cops caught her later. But, I mean, people stop speaking to one another. Friendships, lifelong friendships are over. Families don't talk to each other. I don't get it. I don't understand.
Well, we had an experience about 8.5 years ago. My wife has two cousins, and they're both highly educated and really a delight to be around. And we were having dinner with them, and they asked my opinion of Obama. And I said, I just blurted out, well, I think he's a communist. All conversation ended
yeah.
about that.
Yeah,
and quite
exactly.
frankly, we've had opportunities to be around them, and we really like them, but we've avoided the opportunities because they are so rabid, and it's not a pleasure to be around them anymore because of all they can talk about is hating Trump and what he's done to destroy the country.
Yeah, it's I don't understand. It's you're right. I mean, people just walk away. Hashtag walk away. I mean, that's they truly do. I appreciate the call very, very much. Please don't be a stranger. Let's go to Billy in Fort Worth, Texas. Billy, thank you for waiting. How you doing, Billy?
Hello, how you doing, Mr. Roberts? You know, you talked about the N-word. Well, maybe it's a culture thing because, black folks call each other N-word, and I've heard a lot of white Americans call each other rednecks, and that's one thing. I would not use a word like that. Well, maybe it's a culture thing, right?
You know, it could be. I just wonder if black people call each other the N-word, but it's such a horrible word for a white person to use. Tell me how that works. And when you call another black person the N-word, what does that mean? I mean, what's the connection? What does that mean?
I don't really know, sir, but maybe it feel like they have a right to call each other that word.
Okay.
They grew up with it like that, probably. And okay, like I told you, I would never use the word redneck. I would never call a white person a redneck because I think that would be that's so wrong. Okay.
Yeah. See, so I think it's different. It's sort of like a colloquialism, depending on where you come from. See, redneck is not a derogatory term to me. It just means you.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I understand. But it'd be wrong for me to call another a Caucasian redneck, okay? But my thing, you know that guy called from Tennessee? And the way he was talking about what Mr. Trump should do?
Yeah.
But listen, why didn't you tell him that Mr. Trump is not a king? So this is the way I look at it. You said the Democrats want socialism. Well, okay, the right want Mr. Trump to be a king.
Oh, no. No. You're talking.
Yes, y'all do.
Hold on. Let me respond. I think you're talking about the guy that said Trump should fire Mueller and Sessions, right? Well, first of all.
Everybody, yeah,
first of all, hello. Yes, Trump can fire a cabinet official. They serve at the pleasure of the president. And they can be fired for any cause or no cause. Okay? That's as far as Jeff Sessions goes. Can he fire special counsel? Well, in stark contrast to the White House position, some legal experts believe the special counsel removal would have to be carried out through the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. We're not a monarchy. One guy doesn't call all the shots. But when it comes to Sessions, he serves at the pleasure of the president. He can be fired for any reason or no reason at all.
But when you say he serves at the president's pleasure, type whatever you want to do, that sounds like a king, sir.
Sounds like a king?
He said, okay, you give him the right to do what he want to do. And
no,
Mr. Trump want to do what...
Sir, a police commissioner serves at the pleasure of a mayor. It's a chain of command. You see what I'm saying? That has nothing to do with kings or queens or... Monarchies. Monarchies, one guy calls all the shots. You know, that's not the way it is in this country.
I understand that, but Mr. Trump does not understand that. He want to do things what he want to do, the way he want to do it. But I'm going to tell you, you know who can clear up a lot of stuff?
Who's that?
About the guy, Mr. McConnell. Remember when Obama went to him and told him before the election what Russia was doing, and Mr. McConnell told him, said no, he wasn't going to go along with it. Why don't they bang Mr. McConnell?
Okay, well, what did the Russians do?
Him.
Well, hold on. What did the Russians do?
Russia was meddling in the election, sir.
Meddling in the elections. Wait just a second. I'm not going to cut you off. Billy, what effect did it have on the outcome of the election?
Well, okay, all right. This is what I believe.
Billy?
This is what I
Billy,
believe.
Hang on a second. What effect, if it happened, did meddling have on the outcome of the election?
Okay, this is what I believe, okay?
All right.
Miss Clinton got 3 million more votes.
That's called a popular
Trump,
vote.
Right?
That's a popular vote.
Electoral and popular vote. But they got but she got 3 million more votes than Mr. Trump, right?
That's now, a popular vote. We elect presidents by the Electoral College.
I understand that, and Russia manipulated those red states with the electoral vote.
How did they do? How did they do that?
Really, I don't know.
Okay,
but
that, well, here's the thing, Billy, and I'm only rushing you because I'm out of time. The thing is, even the investigators say the Russians, if they did meddle, had no effect on the outcome of the vote. None. Zero. Nada. I'm Rick Roberts. This is Red Eye Radio.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
That's going to do it for me, Rick Roberts. Thanks to Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.